So let me take you further. Integrative thinking, traditional thinking versus integrative thinking is what is given here in a very small snapshot. Integrative means what? Combining and coordinating diverse, that is different elements into a whole, holistic approach. Taking A and B and putting them together. Thinking, using one's cognitive process to find meaningfulness. Cognition, by my definition, is creating mental map of meaningfulness of the world around you. Creating mental map of meaningfulness of the world around you. There are so many things around me right now. I'm facing the camera. There's my colleague sitting behind the camera. There are some tables and chairs out here. Now, all these things put together creates a meaningfulness in my mind. It's a form of a studio setup, I could think. I could say it's a classroom. I could say something else. So I give a meaningfulness to my surroundings. That's my cognition. So when my cognition process is meaningful to me, I am into a thinking process. And we all cognize. We cognize the various elements and put them in a certain order. And then we correlate each of them. There's a projector on the top. There's the lights that are going bouncing on the ceiling. The camera is, I'm facing the camera right now. Now all these things put together is a cognition with which I say that I'm in a shoot. If someone else comes who has never been in a shoot, he will cognize it differently. Right? So depending upon one's cognition, one's thinking process, one relates with the world. Okay? Now we compare traditional thinking versus integrative thinking. In a traditional thinking, what do? I use the either or approach to take decisions. While in the integrative approach, I use the and approach. I combine. Right? So integrative thinking, traditional thinking versus integrative thinking is what we have understood right now. Now, what is the limitation of the either or approach? When the demands are multiple and all the demands are important, they could make or break a strategic action. When the demands are multiple, I'll take examples now, and all the demands are important, they are multiple and they are important, they could make or break the strategic action. Action which is to do with the long term. Right? For example, the sons in an Indian joint family get married and wish to have their own privacy. As Indians, we all face this. We have seen a number of, you know, there's a movie called Bhagban which talks about this. And we come across families in which, let's say, 2-3 sons are there, maybe 3 sons or 2 sons. They grow up, they get educated, they get married. And then what happens is they don't want to live in a joint family. They want to come away. So usually what happens, what used to happen rather, was either or approach. I can't leave my parents, I'll stay with them. Either or approach. I'll leave my parents and I'll go away so that my children also become different. I want to live alone. Again, either or approach. By leaving my parents, what happens to me? I start missing them. I start missing their nurturing over me. I start feeling uneasy about it. But my call of duty, inverted commas, tells me that I need to be with my wife and my children. So does this create a turmoil? We all know it creates a turmoil. We may justify and say, no, it's all okay and all. Many people do that. It creates a turmoil. I'm missing my parents because I'm away from them. If I stay with my parents, what happens after marriage with my children? Then I find that there's a lot of interference, a lot of influencing happening over my children. They don't grow independent. They start becoming dependent on many things. They can't take their own decisions. A few factors which people discuss is what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is not in absolute terms always correct, but I'm giving examples about what people say, right? So when I'm living with my parents, I don't have privacy. I cannot sit with my family, with my wife and children, and have a separate quality time with them, which I may be perhaps needing, my wife may be needing, my children may be needing, because we are living in a changing time. Now, this is a dilemma which many Indian families are facing. We all know it. Now, certain Indian families have taken an integrative approach. What have they done? Perhaps they go to a particular building, an apartment, And they'll have one flat wherein parents are living. In another flat, one son will live, and the third flat, a third son will live. They have the privacy, at the same time, they are with the parents. There's a lot of give and take, at the same time, both are taken care of. So the best of both worlds are exploited in this particular decision. Quite a few people are doing it these days. It wasn't done long back. So whenever an integrative decision is taken, my dear friends, what really happens is there is a overall good for everyone. Now, that approach is a truly leadership approach. It's not an approach which conventional thinking used to say that you cannot include everything. It's an approach which says that I want to include everything and see that I can address everything. Today, in the complex world of business, this is important. I need to address the smallest of small customers in the stock market as much as I need to address the high net worth individuals, as much as I need to address the institutional customers. Everybody is important for me today. It's not a business angle. It's more about the synergy. It's more about people coming together and working with each other. The integrative approach is not an approach which is a weakness. It's more of a strength. Let me say something now about how the Indian culture has been living. Most of the Eastern cultures, for that matter, or for that matter, the olden cultures of the world. Just scan through it in the history of the world. If you take from east to west and west to east, you will find that the older cultures have understood integrative thinking in action long back. Look at the way the Indians live. We have a lot of integrative approach. Now, some of you may come and say in a logical terms that this creates problems, that creates problems, etc. But if you take the overall picture, problems today may appear to be problems today, but in the long run, you find the benefits are more. Even organizations, if you take an organization view, an organization may take some initiatives today, which an integrative initiative, which may appear to be painful for some aspect of the organization, but in the long run, it integrates with the holistic picture. So this needs a certain amount of openness of approach to understand integrative thinking, right? So let me take it further. Now here is some sort of a representation, pictorial. There's a joint family. Parents are on one side, and you need a privacy. The solution is the sons in the Indian joint family get married and wish to have their own privacy. In an either-or approach, there is a compromise on losing out the benefit of the option that is rejected. I already explained. So what is integrative thinking? Definition: it's a discipline and methodology for solving complex and wicked problems. Wicked. That's what Roger Martin has talked about. Roger Martin, incidentally, is a person who wrote this book, beautiful book called The Opposable Mind. The Opposable Mind. This entire treatment of this particular subject is based on majorly the learnings of Roger Martin, The Opposable Mind. Now, in The Opposable Mind, Roger Martin is exploiting the various cases wherein people have used opposable mind and in turn the integrative thinking. We'll try and understand what is opposable mind as we go down the line, right? Now, wherever there is opposition thinking, there is integrative thinking. Now, what do you mean by opposition thinking? Whenever you want to take a decision, suppose you go to a restaurant, you want to have a coffee or tea, two choices are there. So let's say you choose coffee. Now, why do you choose coffee? Because it's pleasurable. It's something which you have been doing. You prefer that. And it makes life less complicated. You have set a certain habit, a certain pattern. It works. So automatically order for coffee. Automatically order for coffee. Suppose the waiter comes and says, "There's no coffee. There's only tea." Would you take it? Would you take it? In many cases, people will say no, they'll walk out. There are some people who will say, "Theek hai, let's have coffee. Let's have tea." Now, the person who says, "Let's have tea," can say from two different paradigms, two different thinking process. He may resent to the fact that since there is no coffee, I'll have tea. We are not talking about that. We are talking about a person who says, "Fine, if there's no coffee, so what? Let's have tea." Now, integrative thinking happens from a positive angle, not from a resigned angle. While I choose, I prefer coffee, I'm quite comfortable If coffee is not there, I could have tea. If both are not there, maybe they are having something else, some other drink, I'm willing to go for that. So this flexibility of moving around while having your own identity is an integral part of integrative thinking. I have my own identity as a coffee drinker, but I wouldn't mind going in for tea if coffee is not available. I'm not rigid. If I say that I'll have coffee or nothing, I'm walking out, I'm losing out on something. Maybe I'm losing out on the various pleasures of different types of tea which I could drink. The tea tasting, for example, lots of things I may be missing out on that. Those experiences are important for me. Now, this is something people avoid. They avoid it. So what really happens is whenever there's an opposition thinking, there's an integrative thinking. What if I have tea? Suppose I think I'm a rigid coffee drinker. I drink only coffee, let's say. What if I think of having tea? Let me experiment. Let me go and see. Let me sip the tea and see how it is. Probably I've had tea once in a blue moon. And when I do that, my opposition thinking tells me what? No tea, only coffee. So when I have tea for the first time, my mind is not accepting it. My body is not accepting it. But when I have it once or twice, I start seeing meaningfulness in that. Don't you agree? Is this not what has happened to many of you when you took up a new job? A job which you did not like initially because you had some ideas about what a job should be. And then gradually you realize, oh my God, this is not what I thought. It's something different. It's better. Now, do you have the capacity to keep yourself open when a new experience is knocking at you? When a new situation is coming in front of you? That's a question, right? So, whenever there's an opposition thinking, there's an integrative thinking. That is identifying option A and option B, which are mutually opposing. This is what integrative thinking is all about. For example, a person who's employed. Many of you who are listening to me could be in this category. A person who's employed and cannot afford to leave his job. He desires to study an MBA course, but finds it challenging to do it due to time constraints. Many working students are there who do MBA, who are doing the part-time masters. They're doing the distance learning program, hybrid course like what you're doing, right? So what you do is you integrate. One seeks a flexible solution by opting for a part-time MBA program or a distance learning program, like how many of you have done. You have integration already. Taking the best of both worlds. At the end of it is, do you learn it? Do you learn? Are you taking it positively? On one hand, you've got a job constraints, time constraints. On the other hand, you want to learn. So do you combine both of them? Right? This is an example of how integration takes place. Taking it further, integrative thinking is a decision-making process in which an individual balances tensions between opposing variables. Tension means what? The example of tea and coffee. I take coffee. I'm ordering for coffee. The waiter tells me, no coffee, only tea. Immediately, my reaction is, oh my God. There's a certain negative feeling. That's the tension I go through. But if I pause, I say, fine, let's have tea. And then what happens is I come to know the pleasures of having coffee as well as having tea. Right? The integrative thinking is best understood by studying cases of real examples of people who, when put in a challenging situation of opposing demands and crucial time-bound decisions to be taken, undertook the path-breaking decisions that sustained and was effective and efficient. To understand this aspect of whatever I'm explaining right now, we'll be running through a number of case studies, a number of real incidents that took place of people who actually put this into practice. And when we run through that, we'll come to know that there are many things common among these people, right? Unlike conventional thinking, these people did not approach the issues by either or a path. By eliminating alternatives, they looked at the issues from an and or an inclusive angle. Instead of rejecting alternatives, they looked into the useful aspects of each alternative and combined the usefulness skillfully for a better decision that benefited many, and that too in a sustaining time frame. I'm building up a few points which I want you to note down. First and foremost, it's about internal and external put together awareness. It's a skillful approach. It's not an approach that comes out of panic. There's a situation, panic situation, something you take a knee-jerk reaction, and then you find, ah, lovely, it has clicked. It's not a one-off situation. It's not a flash in a pan. It's something which you took a decision which was successful in outcome, which was efficient in terms of resource utilization, which was also effective in whatever we had to address, and most importantly, it was sustaining. When I say sustaining, means it worked and it continued to work for a long period of time. Now, this are some of the aspects of integrative thinking which you and I need to understand. If at any time in your life you've taken a decision and that is sustained, it is still sustaining, it's producing good results, rest assured, it's an integrative thinking. If, for example, the parents and the two sons which I talked about, they took a decision of buying three different flats with a lot of understanding that we'll stay integrated, and they continue to be integrated, there's a lot of joy. In that decision, there were so many things that were taken care of together. Privacy, the togetherness, the warmth, the closeness, the respect, etc. Now, this requires a deeper human understanding. I wish to use the term emotional intelligence as well. One needs to be emotionally intelligent to understand that as a leader, one has to integrate many things together. I cannot ignore the emotions of my workers. I cannot ignore the emotions of my staff. I cannot ignore the emotions of my managers. How do I integrate them together? That's a very supreme role to play. And to play that role, I as a manager, needs to have that type of an open approach, for which I need to have emotional intelligence. Right? And so, instead of rejecting alternatives, they looked into the useful aspects of each alternative and combined the usefulness skillfully for a better decision that benefited many, and that too in a sustaining time frame. Let's examine various scenarios effectively handled by integrative managers. Now on, I'm going to be talking about a few case studies. So I'm taking you to the first case, which is titled as Integrative Thinking and the Rescue of AIC. Let's start off by talking about a gentleman called Michael Lee Chin, who was born in 1951. Jamaican born, Canadian business magnate, investor and philanthropist. A very successful, prominent person in Canada. And among other positions, he is currently the executive chairman of AIC Limited, the Canadian mutual fund company, and the National Commercial Bank of Jamaica as well. Canadian business has named him as one of the richest persons in Canada, with an estimated wealth of $2 billion. During an unexpected crisis in AIC, Lee Chin takes an integrative decision on the organization to sustainability and benefit to all. So we'll be discussing about how AIC got into a crisis and how Lee Chin took it to a very high level of achievement and success thanks to his integrative thinking, right? So now here it is, Michael Lee Chin, background about him, born 1951, Port Antonio in Jamaica, occupation executive chairman of AIC Limited, National Commercial Bank of Jamaica, and the net worth is $2 billion as of 2014, at the time of recording, right? His background, he's born of biracial parents, Jamaican and Chinese, and hence seems to have the best of both worlds. They say that when people are coming from two different backgrounds, two different cultures, two different regions, you get the best of both worlds. It's a way in which nature integrates people. Nature integrates races. When you belong to one race and you marry someone from another race, both of you come have a child, the child is supposed to have the best of both worlds. So one of the points that can be noted is nature itself has got an integration in its whole design. Human beings need to recognize this, and we need to put it into the group good, right? So if you take this example of Lee Chin, he is born of biracial parents And he had seen very hard times in childhood. He was the eldest of 9 children. Both parents were offsprings, children of Jamaican mothers and Chinese fathers. What a combination. Since they came from two different backgrounds, an Eastern culture and a Western culture coming together, they could get the best of both worlds. Right? Now, he was 6 feet 4 inches tall, warm, quick-witted, very humorous, natural salesman with friendly manners. His profile: proud and entrepreneurial, business-like. His stepfather and mother worked very hard and managed to save money to start to run their own business. And yet, money and luxuries were still scarce in their life, thanks to a large family. It was hard to think that their oldest child would one day earn a place of pride in the Forbes list of billionaires. This was to come in the future. Lee Chin moved to Canada to attend McMaster University. After graduation, he worked at odd jobs while looking for his true calling, a career in his true liking and nature. In 1983, he borrowed $400,000 to put to invest in the stock market, and by 1987, he had earned enough money to buy AIC Limited. Imagine, just a span of 3 years, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 4 years rather, he was able to buy the very a company called AIC Limited, a tiny investment advisory firm managing investors' assets worth about $600,000. Right? He followed Warren Buffett's approach to hold 10, 20 stocks forever. We all know about the legendary Warren Buffett, who's the king of all investments, the person who advises, who's very astute, who's got his maturity, and his advice is sought after by the whole investing community in the world. Right? Now, his contention has always been that whenever you're investing in the stock market or any form of investment, don't go for too many numbers. Don't go and buy too many shares of various companies. Buy about 8 or 10 or maybe 20 of them. And then most importantly, hold them. Don't do quick buying and selling or trading, as we call it. Keep them holding for about, say, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. And then you find that the returns are really coming. It's a very sound advice which has earned a lot of money for a lot of people who followed the advice, right? So he also believed in Warren Buffett's principle to hold 10 or 20 stocks forever. By 1999, AIC owned assets worth about $6 billion. Now, the year was 1999, and there was a change that was happening. In 1999 onwards, the changes started taking place. What is the change? The IT boom had already started, right? Now, when IT revolution started, the focus of the stock market shifted from tech stocks, shifted to tech stocks and related industries. The AIC Limited's mutual funds were investing more into manufacturing units, finance companies, etc., which was a trend of the day, because that was a place where a lot of money one could earn. Obviously, a mutual fund will invest only in a place where they can give maximum returns to these investors. So that was the flavor of the day. But come 1999 and the IT boom started, people started shifting their money from the traditional stocks into IT stocks, because that was giving more returns. And so when this happened, the majority of the investments of AIC was not in IT stocks, so its value came down in the market. What we term it as a net asset value, NAV. Right? So when the NAV came down, obviously they couldn't do well, and when they did not do well, they were actually slipping in their profits and their performance. Right? So traditional industries, which were growing at a steady pace, were seen as outdated, and investors started pulling out money from these industries and investing in IT and IT-based fast-track shares that were giving quick returns to the investors. The days of buy and hold stocks were over, and the days of fast profits, day trading had set in. Day trading means I buy a stock in the morning and I sell it in the afternoon. Many people do this. Okay, and people were willing to put in money in the quickly and remove it quickly. Now, this sort of a behavior started becoming rampant. So holding a stock for a long period of time was slowly becoming obsolete. People were not doing that anymore, right? Industries like internet service providers, software.com companies were popular, and traditional investments like financial manufacturing, retail, etc., became old-fashioned, with investors pulling out these stocks. As a result of the shift in the investing strategy, many investors lost faith in AIC's income-generating approach. As a result, for the first time in its history, the Advantage Fund was facing substantial net redemptions. For those of you who are not familiar with the financial market, redemption means a mutual fund, when people give back, when they want the money back, they sell the mutual fund. That's called as redemption. So more and more people were redeeming their mutual funds, and so what was happening was the money was going back to the investors. So the net asset value of the mutual fund, Advantage Fund, which is mentioned here, gradually came down. The company was going into a very bad shape. It sold investments to get back money. More money was flowing out of the fund than more money coming in. Its survival was in doubt. A biggest shock. The low point arrived when one of the most influential newspaper columnists in Canada was critical about AIC's basic model and calling on investors to get out while their holdings were worth something. A very influential newspaper columnist mentioned about how people should stop investing in AIC and come out of it. Now, when an influential person says that, people listen to him, right? That was a panic situation which AIC faced. The article stated that to meet the tide of redemptions, AIC should have to sell its major holdings, thereby bringing their value further down. The new redemption would entail more stock sales, reinforcing a downtrend spiral that would continue until there was, for all intents and purpose, no more AIC. Meaning, gradually, if they have to really survive, they have to sell and invest in tech stocks. Tech stocks are the IT stocks. And then a stage will come when there will not be, there may not be much of people investing into their company because of their philosophy of investing. And then a day will come when the company will have to shut down. This was a bleak scenario which was painted by the columnist in his newspaper, right? And Lee Chin was feeling very awful about it. It was a reality. It's not something that's come out of a imagination, but a reality and a prediction, a forestalling that was happening, right? Now, at this stage, what would you and I do? Normally, people would panic. Here is where integrative thinking starts. We would panic, right? Now, he was also in a distress. But despite his distress, he sensed that an opportunity lurked within the crisis that engulfed AIC. He paused. Learn this habit, learn this behavior, friends. Many people, they panic when things go wrong. It's human nature. You know why we panic? We panic because we almost believe that status quo will remain throughout our life. That's very tragic that we all believe like that. Stability is not constant, friends. Stability is always dynamic. What is stable today is going to change tomorrow. And during the change, people resist change. They resist to the point of willing to die rather than living in glory. Now, when I say living in glory means, whenever a change is about to happen, when my existing stability, my existing status quo is challenged by a change, major or minor, do I have the capacity to look at the change as an opportunity, not a threat? Do I have the capacity to look at the change as an opportunity, not a threat? All I need to do is to pause and see what is the signal I'm getting from the change. Something is happening which I never expected. Something is happening which I never expected. So during that point of time, what is my view towards that? Am I open to understand that this status quo, this stability, this existing profits which have been generating for so many years is going through a transition? In most cases, people panic and they take a panic-driven knee-jerk decision. If you're in the stock market and you've been making profits for a long time, suddenly there is something happens in the stock market, everything comes down, and you find that, you know, nothing is happening, and a lot of people around you whom you trust, they tell you that sell it off. What do? You sell off. And most of the people I've seen in the stock market, they sell off at the lowest price and they buy at the highest price. Very strange but true. Ordinary people do this. So in a crisis like this, if Lee Chin was just an ordinary person, he would have panicked. he would have gone through some knee-jerk reaction, and we would have never seen AIC. But here is Mr. Li Qin, he's doing something different. Very interesting to note that in Chinese character, in the Chinese script, the Chinese alphabets, which are written in a pictorial form, the word crisis can be read in two forms, one as danger and the other one is opportunity. So he tapped on this particular aspect of the Chinese script. When you write the script in Chinese, which is talking about the crisis can be read as a danger from one perspective, and in the danger you can also see an opportunity. Symbolically, it means that whenever you see a threat, look at threat, it's a perception of a threat, not real. It's basically an opportunity seen from a different angle. When we are discussing in strategic management and other subjects about opportunities and threats, I quote this example about how a youngster is sent to Africa of those days to check out whether there is scope for selling footwear to the African tribals of those days. So he goes there and he sees that nobody is wearing footwear. So he goes back and reports saying that zero demand for footwear, so no scope. Now this is seen as a threat by him. The person who listens to him, he says, who said there is no demand? Since nobody is wearing footwear, we have 100% scope for selling footwear. One sees the same situation as a threat, the other one sees it as an opportunity, right? So having said this, two choices he had with him. One is sell the shares to cover redemptions, diversify into technology stock. That means put your money into the IT stocks, or simply stick to the strategy of buy, hold and prosper, just like what Warren Buffett had suggested and he would like to follow. So Li Qin had two choices. Now, given a situation, any one of us would do either this or that, right?